The Lord be with you.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John.
Glory to you, Lord.
The feast of the dedication was taking place in Jerusalem. It was winter, and Jesus walked about in the temple area on the portico of Solomon. So the Jews gathered around him and said to him, "How long are you going to keep us in suspense? If you are the Christ, tell us plainly." Jesus answered them, "I told you, and you do not believe. The works I do in my Father's name testify to me, but you do not believe because you are not among my sheep. My sheep hear my voice. I know them, and they follow me. I give them eternal life, and they shall never perish. No one can take them out of my hand. My Father, who has given them to me, is greater than all, and no one can take them out of the Father's hand. The Father and I are one." The Gospel of the Lord. Okay, I think that we need a bit of homework, okay? I'm not going to walk you through it now, but I think we need a bit of homework. You have to read the 10th chapter of John's Gospel, okay? Just read the 10th chapter. It's not that long, okay? Just read the 10th chapter, and you kind of get what's going on here. The tough thing is, you know, say, okay, Jesus, he's walking about in the temple area. You think, okay, yeah. Just a little bit of peripatetics. He's just, you know, he's doing his old stoic thing. He's instructing his disciples. He's right. It's a nice little stroll. Okay. So, one of the things that we miss in the passage. So we're in this Good Shepherd discourse. What we miss here, because we go from 18 to 22, right? So 19, 20, 21. What happens in verses 19, 20, 21? Someone comes forward and says, "He's demon-possessed." You know, so this is like, okay, this is not a nice little stroll, okay? He's laying claim to Israel as his flock, right? So he's saying, I'm the good shepherd. Yeah, and we know this imagery, at least from the time of David, right? This is God's anointed king and his people. So Jesus is there to say, "I'm the good shepherd." And he's at pains to really drive that home. And then we hear this, "He's demon-possessed." And the reason why they're saying he's demon-possessed is because he healed the man born blind. Okay, so they're bringing that again into the discussion. What is going on with this guy? You know, he's a good shepherd, like, but he's demon-possessed because he healed that guy born blind. And then you have a voice like in the crowd saying, "Well, surely that's not the work of a demon-possessed man." Okay, so what you get this kind of interaction where it's like Jesus is the good shepherd. He's got his sheep. They know his voice. He's leading them out. They're following him. And then he doesn't even have to make defense of himself at this point, because the sheep even are rallying to the call, right? So they understand, okay, they've heard the voice. And actually, more to the point, the man born blind has heard the voice. And he's followed Jesus. He's committed to him. We see that he adheres to Jesus over and against the opposition of the rulers, of the leaders, of the people who are coming after him to say, "Yo, who is this guy? We're going to drag this guy through the dirt. You know, this guy was blind for a reason. I mean, this guy is full of sin. You know, who is this guy?" And he's just there to say, just clinging to Jesus because he's the one who saved me. Yeah, so we're in this space where you start to hear things like, "I give them eternal life and they shall never perish." And you go, there's very little reference to that, right? What's the point here? Well, he's given that man eternal life. He's given the man born blind eternal life. And that is the healing strength of God's own life of love. It's now at work in him, in that man, and through him, as he trusts and follows Jesus in all things. Because it is very practical. I mean, this is part of the challenge of reading the Gospel of John, I think, in little clips. It's like it just spins off into the ethereal all the time. But there's always this material reference. Why is there always the material reference in the Gospel of John? It's because the Word became flesh. And John is at pains to show what that looks like throughout his gospel. You just kind of spin it off into the ethereal, into the spirit realm or something like that when you get short little clips of the Gospel of John. But really, he's showing us what it looks like when the Word becomes flesh. And then I think when the Word takes flesh in the lives of people, this is what it looks like when eternal life, say, takes possession of people, takes possession of the flesh, as it were. And we see then the marvelous works of God. Okay, so here in the temple, Jesus, it's a massively controversial scene, okay, because he's in the temple, the Feast of the Dedication, okay, Hanukkah. Yeah, he's in the temple at that time. And there, Hanukkah, the cleansing of the temple, the institution of Judas Maccabeus as the, at one time, the rebel king, but now the king of the Jews, right? All this stuff is going on, like, in the background just by, you know, hearing about these three words, the Feast of the Dedication. Jesus is walking about in the temple. And then, of course, they ask him, "You're going to keep us in suspense? If you're the Christ, tell us plainly." Okay, and there's an edge to that, right? Because it's like, we're really not happy with you, okay? But if you're the Christ, tell us plainly. Because let us know if we're going to have to make a decision about you, right? And the decision, of course, they already know which way they're going to go. They'll kill him. Right? Let us know. Now, the same, say, confrontation happens to us today. Because Jesus is the rightful ruler of every human heart. He's the rightful ruler of your heart. So we can't treat Jesus as, okay, yeah, you know, whatever it is, humble Jesus, patient and kind, and, you know, this little kind of diminutive version of the real thing, right? Or as Bishop Barron says, like, the domesticated Jesus. Like, we would domesticate him. No, this is always like the wild man Jesus. He's the king, right? He's sayings goes, he's either the Lord of all or he's not Lord at all. Yeah, but we're confronted with that. That's who he is, right? That's who he actually is. He is the Lord of all, but we're confronted with the reality that he's, for us, either the Lord of all or he's not the Lord at all. And this is exactly what the question is that he faces. Tell us plainly. Tell us plainly. You the Christ? Because then they say, well, he's a dangerous man who should be killed. But what's happening in the midst of that confrontation is that he's speaking the word of life, and his sheep know him by voice, and they follow him. So even here, that's right, he doesn't have to defend himself against his opponents here, because the sheep are, in fact, hearing his voice, and they're following him, and they're being led into eternal life right there in them, okay? So he says, I told you, and you do not believe, right? So are you the Christ? I told you, and you do not believe. He's just said, I'm the good shepherd. What is there not to get, right? No, they want to, say, push into the place where they can marginalize him. So again, this is for us. Again, the Lord of all, or not Lord at all. So we're either going to go with him all the way, or we're really not going with him at all. And we do it at the voice again, at the sound of the voice of the Good Shepherd. Okay, so what do I want to say here? And I'll wrap up. One is this great promise on the horizon. Okay, I give them eternal life, they shall never perish, no one can take them out of my hand. My Father who has given them to me is greater than all, no one can take them out of the Father's hand. Right. So if we have this relationship with Jesus, where we hear his voice and we follow him, he's the one who bears the burden. He's the one who, say, takes the risk or suffers the cost or whatever it may be. He's the one who defends his sheep. He gives them life, he gives them nourishment, sustenance, and the rest. It's just ours to follow him. So and that whole bodied commitment of following him, we won't go wrong. We cannot go wrong there. Because we by virtue of following him, trusting and following him, we're caught up in the relationship of Father and Son, which is absolutely unbreakable. I mean, if that bond were breakable, the universe would fall into non-existence. Like, it would be a contradiction in terms even to have this say, a break between the Father and the Son. It doesn't happen. It's not going to happen. That's the security of that promise for us, that we have eternal life. He defends us. He protects us. He guides us, nourishes us, sustains us, and the rest. He preserves us for eternal life. Right? Okay, so this is a great promise, but it's about trusting and following Him. Okay, so how do we do this? Right? We do this, of course, by bringing ourselves before Him. We're offering ourselves to the Good Shepherd. Yeah, we're participating in His own life of love. And so He's not only breathing His Spirit into us, He's nourishing and sustaining us with His own life of love, His risen body and blood. Okay? And when He does this, when he's nourishing and sustaining us with His own body and blood, we have at work in us and working through us God's own life of love. So it means that we can do two things in all things. Right? We can glorify God in all things. We can serve Him in all things. We can serve God in all things. So we can glorify God in all things. Everything that we think and say and do, right? Every activity and endeavor that we find ourselves a part of, we can glorify God there. Now, if we cannot glorify God where we find ourselves, we have to go somewhere else. Okay, we have to change something up. If you find yourself in a place ever where you cannot glorify God, you have to change something. Okay? Now, the other part is that in all things, not giving, I mean, this is, say, two sides of the same coin. We give God glory in all things. We can live out of the power of His love in all things. So that, again, every activity or endeavor that we find ourselves a part of can and ought to be inspired by charity and sustained by charity. So I can say, no matter where I find myself today, I can say, does this glorify God? Does this glorify God? Or what best glorifies God here? And that's the thing that I have to do. That's following the Good Shepherd. Okay, and I could say, well, am I doing the most loving thing here? You know, what is the most loving thing for me to do here? And that's what I do, following the Good Shepherd, because this is how or where He's leading and guiding us. Yeah, and I hope that whether it's throughout our day or our week or our month or our year or whatever, we find ourselves with some frequency saying, I can identify what best gives God glory here. I can identify what is the most loving thing to do here, and I don't think I can do it. I hope that happens. I hope that happens. Because it's a matter of God's radical generosity, right? Awakening in us the idea of what is the most charitable thing to do, what most conduces to the call of the Good Shepherd, and then realizing that the only way that it's going to happen is if He gives me the strength that I need in order to do it. Because then we're really living into that relationship, as opposed to saying, yeah, I'm going to do it by my own strength and wisdom and grace and whatever. That kind of stuff is hardly worth a thing at the end. We'll participate in God's own life and live with Him that life that is nothing other than inspired radical generosity. So He is making the way for us. And if we then cling to Him, just as the man born blind is, we cling to Him, adhere to Him in all things, we will find ourselves not only witnesses to, but even conduits of the great and glorious works of God.